I want to know everything there is to know about you.
Now I'm going to introduce me.
You must have spotted her by now. She's always there.
Don't I deserve love?
Somebody has to like me best.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I sure as hell wouldn't have quit smoking if I had known my sister was going to die.
Welcome to the Donaher Podcast. I'm Michael.
And I am Scott.
And we are here, as always, to talk about an underappreciated actor who, well, this time actually, we don't necessarily love.
We don't know.
No, that is a lie. We are taking we're taking suggestions from listeners, and this came from a really great friend of ours, Brian Moriarty, who complained that we were doing people that were way too famous and too celebrated.
Sorry, Brian.
Exactly. We're sorry, not sorry. And he suggested someone like Beth Grant.
Never mind.
So we are very grateful, Brian, and very excited to have dived into the career and life of one of the most prolific actors working in America. And also prolific in her interviews. When we did the previous episode for Jennifer Ely, they were like struggling to find any sort of material or, you know, sharing her experience with work. And thankfully, Beth Grant
loves it.
Yeah, she loves to chat.
That's
and
great.
The world is much better for Beth Grant and everything she's brought in. She is so interesting. So how do you feel about looking at Beth Grant?
Oh yeah, I think Beth Grant would have been the exact kind of person, again, when we were first talking about doing this podcast, that would have come to my head. But then for whatever reason, we've made it to 50 plus episodes and haven't done. I have always thought very fondly of her, particularly because when I was growing up getting into films, Donnie Darko was one of my favourites, as it was for probably a lot of teenagers of our age bracket, I'm guessing, because it was so mysterious and angsty.
Yeah.
And she is really good in that film. And I am a forever long diehard fan of Speed. So
the drug.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't,
well, she is too.
Do without it. Yeah, both of us on it all the time. So yeah, I think she's marvelous. She's unique. She's perhaps typecast. We can get to that, but
yeah,
she is maybe also typecast for good reason, because I don't know if you can get anyone else to really do what she does. And at times it's very specific. At other times it's a little more broad and might stray a little bit further from what we know her for, but in her most iconic turns, she might only be there for 2 to 3 minutes, but you will remember her. And that way, she's perfect for this.
On one hand, it's odd. On the other hand, it makes sense that she has never had a moment to be celebrated. You know,
sure,
there's character actors who have somehow transcended into a Best Supporting Actor or a Best Supporting Actress win, which has then propelled them further. If you think about like Octavia Spencer, when you look at her filmography pre The Help, or even someone like Allison Janney, who I know is a bit different because of The West Wing, but would turn up in things and you'd always enjoy.
Yes.
But now, you know, they are the gold standard,
yes,
of a supporting,
yes,
character actor. And that hasn't happened. And again, we will get into that because thankfully Beth Grant talks about roles she may have got, which she didn't get, which would have included Oscar-nominated or winning turns for other people. Specifically, Kathy Bates, she likes to refer to. But I love it. It's so funny. When you say, like, she's unforgettable, I don't forget her characters. So if I think of, like, the films I would have seen without knowing who she was, You're Dead Right, Donnie Darko, Tu Wong Fu, Speed, but it was not really until Little Miss Sunshine, where I clocked, was like, who is this woman? Mm. I love Little Miss Sunshine anyway, and watched it so much, much more than, I mean, the other films maybe that she's appeared in. But something about her being that sort of conservative woman who holds the key to whether or not Abigail Breslin's Olive will be able to take part in the beauty contest.
Everybody else was here before three. I'd be giving unfair advantage.
No, we're not looking for an advantage. We just want her to compete. That's it.
Don't yell at me, sir. I didn't make you late.
I don't know why I found that really memorable. Because, and then she's part of the downfall in a way, or of the beauty pageant, but the total upswing of seeing Olive be her true, authentic self, stripping on stage, and Beth Grant trying to stop the whole thing.
Yes.
So, yeah, I found her really memorable there. And then ever since then, when she's turned up, I'm just like, yeah, great. So, yeah, rewatching things, it was like when I rewatched Tu Wong Fu and realized she was kind of the, not the lead of the people being made over, but yeah, like the key one.
Yes.
She's the one that has Wesley Snipe. So it's like,
ooh, check yourself, Loretta, before you wreck yourself.
Wonderful. She's wearing this outfit. She's having a great old time. She's part of the story, as she usually is, to help the characters on their journey. And in that instance, is to, like, Stockard Channing is looking at her, smiling and wishing that would be herself and would escape from domestic abuse and just have a nice time. And I feel like Beth Grant is often used in movies as a sort of solid character actor to get characters to one place to another.
Yeah, no, that's a very good way of putting it. I mean, she is, I don't normally like the term character actress because so often it refers to people who just play a variety of characters and will be leads and everything, but she kind of is, because you don't really want to just call her like a supporting player, like that shit, but character actress is something that she defines herself as and recognises that in herself and the moments where she realised that that's how she was going to approach her work. When she was at school, for example, she speaks of a drama teacher who challenged her desire to be the leading lady and thinking that no part was good enough for her and thinking that she was above the types of stuff that I think he describes like Thelma Ritters and Agnes Moorheads and these types of people. And then she kind of felt a bit hard done by the fact that she wouldn't be the lead. And he said, gosh, what was it? You're not that kind of person. You're salt of the earth and that's a great thing and you should embrace being that. And then at that moment, she says she just started working with that and that's why she's never stopped working because she's so in demand. She's always doing these for the most part, very small parts in lots of projects. So she really is a character actress. And I think we are all the better for having her pepper films as much as she does because it's always so much fun to see her. And it's interesting that she has kind of been typecast as these sort of villain types that you describe in Little Miss Sunshine, conservative types very, very often. And from watching these interviews and stuff, and I'm so glad I did because it was good to go, oh, no, you're not that person at all and you're a delight. And I'm obsessed with the fact she's such good friends with Octavia Spencer and Viola Davis and all of these wonderful women. Frances Fisher.
We need to do an episode on Frances so you can get this negative energy out of your body. I'm joking, though.
I mean, I'm inspired by her puppetry. So
yeah, if I can get my favorite actress an Oscar nomination too, I would be doing that.
Yeah, yeah. So credit to Frances Fisher, but also Beth Grant for just being what seems to be a downright wonderful woman and terrific actress.
Yeah, and she said in her interview, exactly, like, why be a Rolex when you can just be salt of the earth?
Yeah, that's what it was. Why be a Rolex?
And I love, yeah, and that's come from, as you say, her teaching and everything. She also talks about something which is interesting to reflect on when you, like, in her roles. She talks about finding the sexiness in her characters. And I find that really great. Like, her characters, even, say, someone like her character in Sordid Lives, there's a sense that, like, they want to appeal to people.
Yes.
Do you know? I don't know. There's something about it that, like, unlocked the door to me in terms of, yeah, this is something she does bring a lot.
Yeah, and you can, yeah, I think you can apply that to many things that we see her do, which makes it interesting. I think she's choosing to care about the characters, whoever they may be, and that does show.
And she also has the brilliant stat that she has been in three Best Picture Oscar winners, with Rain Man, No Country for Old Men, Man. No Country for Old Men.
There's No Country for You Old Men.
Yeah, exactly. And The Artist, which I think is really impressive
it
because,
is.
Well, you think if someone was in those sorts of films and in, you know, pretty good parts in them too, they would be bigger. But then you could also go for my No Country for Old Men, like why is Kelly MacDonald not a bigger name, for instance. But yeah, I'm just so happy that Brian has brought Beth to us, and we chomped at the bit and we're here now to celebrate her.
I hope we do her justice for you, Brian.
Yes.
Anywho, shall we leap into the career and take a look at some of those films that she has been in?
Yeah.
Wonderful. Then let's go. So, Beth Grant was born on September 18th, 1949 in Gadsden, Alabama. She was then raised in Wilmington, North Carolina, which is where she also attended high school. She would also attend the North Carolina Governor's School for Gifted and Talented Students as well. So she must have been a real smarty pants. And then in terms of university, she went on to study acting and directing at the East Carolina University, where she graduated in 1973, before moving to New York to pursue a career in acting. And she cites her activist mother as her key inspiration for becoming an actress. Yeah. Beth is one of, like we've described, the US's most prolific actresses, appearing in over 100 feature films, three of which, like we've mentioned, being Best Picture Oscar winners, and has also appeared in over 90 television shows.
Wow, God, that is even more than I would have thought.
It's wild. And then also, I was really trying to hunt down her stage credits. Seemed to be very hard to find, or maybe I'm looking in the wrong places. But IMDb also tells me over 30 plays as
Whoa.
Well.
Yeah, she talked about that, and I can't think of the name of the play she did, which was then recorded in some sort of VR way.
It was an Othello.
Othello,
that
that's it, yeah.
Yes.
And it wasn't that Viola Davis's husband was involved?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't keep her from working.
Yeah, no, I think it's crazy. I literally don't even know how, even if it's small parts, how you can find the time to do 190 screen, even if they're appearances, and 30 plays.
And she talks a lot about doing short films as well, so I don't know if they're included in the 100 films you mentioned, but she just seems to be really passionate about her work.
Yeah, no.
It's really wonderful to listen to her. I do recommend people seek out interviews with her on podcasts or YouTube or wherever.
Yeah, for sure. She's fascinating. Wonderful, wonderful. Her first on-screen work came in a variety of performances within television, starting with something called BJ and the Bear. In 1979, yeah, BJ and the Bear. But that seemed to be a bit of a one-off for a while. It was 1986 where the roles really start to pick up, and she's working a lot in television in that year. Her first film role comes in 1987's Undercover, but it would only take until the next year for her first major film role, with a small part in Best Picture winning Rain Man in 1988.
This was an interesting person to approach in terms of watching films in preparation. But as I had never seen Rain Man, and it's obviously very significant in her career, I watched it for the first time.
Mm.
And to be honest, I don't know why, but I watch films for a purpose. So I've watched most of the Best Picture winners. But Rain Man and Chariots of Fire, actually, are two of the most recent ones I hadn't watched until recently. Will say I really wish I never watched Chariots of Fire, but Rain Man I found really worked for me, and I think so. If people don't know the story, it's about Tom Cruise, who's is his dad dying? Is that what happens?
Gosh, I mean, I haven't watched Rain Man.
Well, for some reason, he goes and he discovers that he has a brother that he didn't know about, who has a severe autism, played by Dustin Hoffman. And he also Dustin Hoffman has inherited or has power over attorney or something along those lines. I did watch this movie, and the bit where I got really into it is where they go on this road trip, and there's which does work into stereotypes of autism, but you know, autism wouldn't have been known about in the way that it is today in terms of research, in terms of public awareness. So I do give the film a lot of credit, and I one of the things which Dustin Hoffman wants or needs is to watch TV at a certain time. So they end up at Beth Grant's house. Yes. And Tom Cruise thinks it's best if they like lie and say that, you know, they're here to do a job. She's not convinced. And then she does let them in when she realizes, you know, well, I have kids, they need to watch the cartoons. Yeah. And then they watch the show. And it's just such a small moment in a film full of lots of small moments, really. But she gives such a wonderful little performance there. And you believe it and you feel a sense of comfort and she gets it. And I think Tom Cruise is also supported in a way because he's seeing, you know, he needs to be more supportive of Dustin Hoffman and he meets this woman who is supporting for like 7 children or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a very small thing. But, I think it is worthwhile shouting out about it. And yeah, I would recommend Rain Man. I then watched the Irish short film that won the Oscar this year, An Irish Goodbye, which is a ripoff of Rain Man. Watch them together, it's like, yeah. Oh, this is Rain Man. It's about a man coming back from England to his house his farm in Ireland, and he's gonna put his Down syndrome brother somewhere. Whereas the Down syndrome brother wants to live in the house and then he gets all these wishes and they go on a journey. And it's like, this is Rain Man. And this is wild. I've watched these two things in the same day.
Oh. Well.
So I'm just showing the impact of Rain Man. And that story still has resonance, even if it would be tweaked. The character just not from place a lot. But well, I loved it, yeah.
Good. Well, maybe I'll go back and rewatch it. I mean, I remember being charmed by it. So I wouldn't have anything bad to say about it either. So maybe worth a look again.
For sure.
Okay, well, let's move on. So that's 1988. So as Beth has been such a busy performer, I'm going to choose to call out only a few of her highlights, which we normally do. But in this case, I'm really having to shrink the pack as I trot through her acting career. So through the remainder of the late 80s and early 90s, she starts to rack up a lot of credits, including Flatliners, Don't Tell Her It's Me, Welcome Home Roxy, Carmichael, I nearly forgot the Carmichael there, Child's Play 2, I have seen the clip of her in Child's Play 2 with Chucky jumping out of the wardrobe at her, and it's quite something.
Yeah, and you can imagine she, again, is probably playing a very conservative woman who is a joy to watch this doll murder her.
Perfect, get her, Chucky. Oh, a 2-episode run in The Golden Girls. What a treat.
Oh, my God. I was going to say rewatching it, but because I never watched it properly. I can't wait to get to her episode.
Oh,
do you know what episode she's in or what series?
I'm afraid I can't help you with that, but it would have been late 80s.
Okay.
So hopefully you get there. White Sands, Love Field, an episode of Murder, She Wrote.
As always, that seems to be a staple now of people we do around this time.
Maybe we could just start using that as the means of finding who we do next. Yeah. Were they in Murder, She Wrote? No, then fuck them. Okay, so that takes us up to 1994. So in that year, alongside a brief appearance playing a homeless person in an episode of Friends, she's also in City Slickers 2, but this is where we have Grant in one of the greatest action films of all time. It is Speed.
What a movie.
What a movie indeed. I mean, I have a real soft spot for action films of this time. I would say this and Die Hard are my absolute faves. It's irresistible to me. I can watch it all the time. For those who are unfamiliar with Speed, it is about a bomber who plants a explosive device on a bus, which means that once it goes over 50 miles an hour, if it drops below that again, the bus and everyone on it will blow up. So Keanu Reeves makes his way onto this bus where we have Sandra Bullock who ends up taking the reins as the driver, as the original driver finds himself injured. And then also on the bus, amongst many others, we have Beth Grant as a very, very concerned individual.
She is so concerned. So concerned, in fact, she wants to get off the bus.
Oh, really bad. Really bad once off that bus.
Really interestingly, so the film she signed up for was more a sort of character study of the people on the bus. Were you reading this too? So she had, like, it sounds so interesting. I had known that the original concept was they didn't leave, like, it all was on the bus. Like, that was the film. But the studio was like, no, like, we need to up the ante and they need to get off the bus. And they had the intro bit too. But Beth's character changed a lot. So all that backstory, all that sort of detail is lost. So she is, you know that her and Sandra Bullock and the people on the bus know each other because they take the bus every day. But her concern, like, she is, again, playing this part of, well, a warning to the other characters, but really pushing our heroes, Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves, forward by testing Dennis Hopper, who plays the villain's threat that if anyone left the bus, he would kill them.
After Annie.
No, Helen! No! Helen, no!
Helen, right there!
Helen, no!
Yeah,
and he does, and what a way to go!
Oh,
and
it is very fun when you literally see her tumbling under the bus.
It is, yeah. Like, that's the thing about films back then. I feel like they were not didn't shy away from that sort of comedic violence or cartoonish. You know the way, like, Disney films, the villains used to like drop from a height.
Yeah.
Nowadays, they just go and are reformed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Beth Grant tumbling off the bus basically letting everyone know you're fucked.
Yeah.
Is really wonderful and iconic. That is as iconic as you can get from an action film in the 90s.
Yeah, exactly.
Particularly for women.
Yeah, so she gets a moment. It launches Sandra Bullock. I mean, what a thing. So I'm forever grateful for Speed.
And they're lifelong friends. And Sandra Bullock also went to they went to the same school. I'm pretty
really?
Certain.
Oh my God, that's so
well, I don't school. They went to the same education at some point. I, as you were leading it, I didn't write down those notes. But yeah,
I didn't even clock that at any point.
Yeah, so they're great chums. That's why Sandra thought she'd try and derail Beth's career with All About Steve a few years later.
Oh, well, thankfully she didn't, and she's still going strong. Although it does get a bit patchy after All About Steve. So, Sandra, what have you done?
Well, she has two Oscar winners from there, right? When's All About Steve?
Well,
I see, it feels like that film should be from the 80s. If we're talking about autistic characters, All About Steve, I know we're jumping ahead, but About Steve is wild how what is going on in that film and how it sort of thinks it's portraying a kooky woman. But actually, they're really treating Sandra Bullock like shit for most of that movie. Have you ever seen it?
No, and I was going to watch after you said you had it. I was like, well, maybe I should give it a go and
see what the
Razzie was all about. But
Sandra, it's not her fault.
No.
I never would say it's
The Razzies is horseshit anyway.
Mm. Speaking of horseshit,
we move on to where things go only downhill from Speed. No, I'm joking. She's always got good stuff on the go. But yay, Speed, what a launching point, even if it meant her launching from a bus. 95, we see Grant with a very fleeting part in Todd Haynes' Safe. She's also in an episode of Sister, Sister. And, of course, the already mentioned podcast favourite, To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Neymar.
Wonderful.
A wonderful film. We have spoken about it previously when speaking about Stockard Channing and John Leguizamo. So go back there if you want more context. But she's having a great time, like Michael said. Everyone, it seems to me, is having a great time in that film. Mm-hmm. And I guess an interesting one to cite for her is that she did have a lot of respect for Patrick Swayze, and she cites as someone else who helped her not in a mean way, realised that she was a character actress, but kind of helped her with that sort of like, you know, you're great and you're so good at this, and just, you know, keep doing what you're doing and being amazing. And she was delighted to then work with him again here, because she had worked with him on a couple of occasions, I believe.
Oh, he sounds like such a lovely man.
Yeah, he does. I mean, it was always something I never really understood, the Patrick Swayze thing. But as I've gotten older, I'm like, no,
oh my
I
God, have
it.
You seen Dirty Dancing?
Yeah, well, no,
do you have
they,
a penis?
It, it didn't do anything for me, but now I'm kind of like, yeah, Lord. I can see it.
If he lifted me up, I would be, I'd be his forever.
Oh, beautiful.
There's something about him, I don't know, in that movie, he's just such a gentleman and, you know, rough around the edges and knows what to do. And also, I do think in Tu Wong Fu, also very hot.
Yeah. No, he is something in that, all right.
Sorry. When we do our Patrick Swayze episode, I can vent all these, because I was about to talk about Keeping Mum. No. There's a lot. I have a long list of why I like Patrick Swayze.
Beth Grant.
Which has nothing to do with Beth Grant.
But, you know, always welcome. Anyway, where are we? So that's mid-90s, so let's go into the late 90s.
Well, can I stop you right there? Because one of my favourite pieces of trivia from researching Beth is that she was basically on the sidelines for Titanic to play Molly Brown.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, so, I didn't clock her saying that.
So, yeah, She basically she called them like pace horses. So like, you know, they'll have the star, but if they can't get the star, they'll have someone on the side. Which actually is how she got Donnie Darko. Apparently they had someone else in mind, but they had Beth Grant waiting in case they couldn't get this person. But Kathy Bates, she talks about it really funny. She says like, I actually thought I was going to get it. I really wanted to. I love the script. I wanted to work with James Cameron. And then she heard Kathy Bates was going to take it, and she was going to be paid $100,000 for it. So Beth Grant was like, my audition must have been so awful, because I'm basically worth paying someone else $100,000 to be like, to get rid of me. So she talks about really frightened, but she talks about that as the role she really wish she got that she didn't get. Because she also was considered, I mean, I don't know how close she would have been for Misery, as Annie Wilkes, which, I mean, both of those parts, it's, for me, that's hard to remove Kathy Bates from those roles, and I wouldn't change them. But it would be, like, what a different trajectory it would be if Beth Grant played Molly Brown.
Oh, gosh, all of those things would be so different. It's very interesting here, I did hear her talk about that one, but her saying that she's sort of delighted for anything Kathy Bates gets because she thinks she's so wonderful and sort of more fits the mould, I guess, of character actress. But when these more leading ladies, as she describes, step in her lane, she isn't so into that, describing Jessica Lange and Meryl Streep wanting parts that she was set to have. And it's like, gosh, that is fascinating. Looking back, I can't really work out so much what it would be. We had a few kind of guesses, but it's kind of hard to work, especially for Meryl. Like, what?
The prom?
Imagine.
Well, I don't know what it is, but imagine it was the Iron Lady. Would love that. But we talk about this offline a lot, but like, I just imagine like any British actor or actress over 50, you know, Olivia Colman is going to get those parts.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, even Emily Watson is probably only gets a look in if Olivia Colman says no. And I think it is shitty that that happens, particularly with women, when there's not as many female-driven stories as there should be. So, yeah, Meryl, get back in your lane.
Yeah. I mean, that is frustrating to hear, that it's like you do have everything that you want in terms of roles, so you definitely don't need to be stepping on other people's turf. So as much as I love you, Meryl, and Jessica Lange, yeah, get back in your lane.
And the anti-Meryl Streep movement will begin on the 4th of June. We're going to meet outside Meryl's house and have a little protest.
No, we know. You've been trying to recoup people for this movement since the first episode of this podcast. So,
Anyway, sorry, I've interrupted you long enough.
You get back in your lane.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, let's get back into her career, late 90s. So, of course, steady stream of work continuing. We see her in A Time to Kill, A Thousand Acres. So here we have a Jessica Lange film, actually. We also have Lawn Dogs, which she cites as something she had a lot of fun filming in Nashville. Sam Rockwell, she thinks it's a really beautiful film. So,
And A Beautiful Man.
I think I have seen Lawn Dogs. I think it's quite a peculiar film, actually. We have her in Eddie Murphy's Dr. Dolittle. She has a 3-episode run in the forever iconic Sabrina the Teenage Witch and an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer spin-off Angel. In 2000, we have her in an episode of The X-Files. She's really racking up all these
She's
big,
an iconic
show.
Sister, X-Files.
Yeah, every single one she's done. So 10 out of 10 for getting your way in everywhere, Beth. And then this is where we have her as Sissy Hickey in playwright and director Del Shore's Sordid Lives. So Del Shore's is going to come up a couple of times, and this is a name I'd never heard of. I hadn't seen anything he'd done before. She stars in a couple of his works, this being the first, and the second and a more leading work will come a few years later. We'll cover that in a moment. But Del Shore's, as it turns out, was a good friend of, or is a good friend of Beth Grant's. He's a gay playwright, director, someone that actually she remembers when he did come out to her, because I think he previously had a family and wife. And she remembers that time very fondly. So obviously we're very, very close. I appreciate him for giving her far meatier roles than it seems that most other people certainly, well, the vast majority of other people she worked with. So 10 out of 10 for allowing that, Del. Mm. Sordid Lives, though, tells the story of sort of a lot of strands of a southern family and kind of people surrounding that family as we kind of move towards the funeral of a mother character who's already passed away by the time the film starts. Beth Grant plays, I guess she'd be an aunt type character in the context of the film. Oh no, she is one of the daughters of the mother who's died.
But you're right, she's very, the others are so much more dramatic around her, and she is very, I don't want to say controlled, but she's much more, say, motherly or matronly than the other characters. So you would be forgiven for thinking she was not a child of the mother, but more a sister or a cousin or something.
Yeah, and it's a fascinating cast. You've got Olivia Newton-John in there. You've got Leslie Howard. You've got
Leslie Jordan. Leslie Howard. I was like, wait a second. Was he even alive?
Oh my God, as if. This is why I should really write down these things. My gosh, that's
I would ridiculous. Love to live from Gone with the Wind to Sordid Lives.
He's done it all and really transcending time. My goodness.
He wants to be in as many Best Picture winners as Beth Grant, so he thought Sordid Lives is the way to do it.
Yeah. Perfect. He had a real sort of strange Marlon Brando type arc. Okay, let's actually look at this.
Let's figure out who was actually in this movie.
Who was actually there?
Well, Leslie might have been alive. But anyway, Leslie Jordan is in it. He plays the what would you say, like, ostracized brother who is sent somewhere to address his sexuality.
Very peculiar scenes with a therapist.
Oh my God, but I loved it, because when it started, I was like, what the hell is... Because this is when it was made, you know, language around gender and transitioning and sexuality were maybe not as... nuanced as we have today. There's no maybe about it. They were not nuanced. And this film is a prime example of perhaps how you would never speak about certain things. But Leslie Jordan is so, A, having such a great time, and B, is the most powerful part of the film. Like, his character is really understands, you know, like the therapist is trying to have sex with them and they are having a laugh, you know. Because I don't know, maybe you've never been in scenarios like that where people ask silly questions like, but have you ever tried to have sex with a girl? Or have you, all the random shit. And you're like, to watch it on a film like that is quite funny for me. And yeah, so it's about those strands are happening separately and then they do come together at the end of the funeral.
Yeah.
And Beth Grant's so much fun. There was, like, from the off, her character is trying to give up smoking and has an elastic band around her wrist. So whenever she wants a cigarette, she smacks the elastic. And there's something about the timing and the use of that I just found really endearing, and I knew I'd have a great time with the film. And it just was fun to watch her. Obviously, she does start smoking and all that, and it's really fun to watch her character stress out because everyone else around her is losing their minds. And she's just a really positive presence too. I really liked the movie.
She is, yeah.
Oh, nothing. Well, if you must know, it's a little quit smoking therapy that Roger over at the Beehive shared with me while he was back combing my hair. He paid $2,000 at this clinic over in Snyder, and they give him a rubber band. Told him to pop his arm with it every time he wanted a cigarette. It's called behavior modify something another.
I found her to be the best part of the film, even though a lot of people, like you said, are having a lot of fun. We have a couple of characters who get really into Thelma and Louise and take to a bar to force their, partners.
Yeah, one of kind of done them dirty
into, it's Bo Bridges.
Oh, Bridges, sorry.
Into drag and insist that they refer to these ladies as Thelma and Louise. So that was a lot of fun. I think this one had also come from a play. Maybe there is a sense of that. Definitely a wild ride. And Olivia Newton-John literally singing throughout and singing in a way that I knew she sounded like, but it's kind of like taking the Olivia Newton-John, making her more American country and not being a million miles away sound-wise from Dolly Parton at certain parts in her career. Yeah, really interesting things in this film. I'm certainly glad to have seen it, that's for sure. And mostly for Beth Grant elastic banding herself for wanting cigarettes.
Yeah, and it should say it's clearly not a Hollywood studio film.
No.
It's a very low budget movie, and I think that's part of its charm as well. Yeah, I overall really, really liked it. Really glad to see it. I probably never would have.
Goodo. All right. From there, we go into 2001. We see Beth in Rockstar. We see her in Pearl Harbor. A return.
She's in Pearl Harbor.
She's in Pearl Harbor, yeah.
She got her Titanic moment.
Yeah, she found her way there in the end. Give me a big
Do you know what she plays?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes sense. So she plays Motherly Secretary in Pearl Harbor. Terrific, makes sense, lovely.
And against type.
And very against type. We never see her as a motherly character. No, we do. We see her return to Murder, She Wrote, and she stars in the feature-length episode, The Last Free Man. And then it's also this year we get her as Kitty Farmer in Donnie Darko. Was Donnie Darko a film that kind of occupy the same space for you as it did for me in your earlier film years? How do you feel about that film?
Donnie Dark, I was at this time too obsessed with, I guess, exuberance of film in a different way, like Moulin Rouge, or I still would have, not the prequels of Star Wars, but Star Wars. I don't think Donnie Darko did it for me in the same way. I think there's probably examples against this, but I think the idea of me falling for a film about a young straight man who's handsome, kind of just like wandering through life, isn't something that I would. I mean, the closest I can think of that around that age is Fight Club, but I think even Fight Club, it wasn't necessarily I like the characters the way a lot of people like resonated with them. It was more to do with just fascination of the storytelling and the device. Do you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
Donnie Darko follows Jake Gyllenhaal's Donnie as he is not taking his medication and he is hallucinating. Although, see, that might be like really discrediting the film. He is seeing this figure, and as he explores time travel and meets the Jenna Malone who arrives in the school, and a piece of a plane falls on top of his bedroom, he just kind of reflects in an existential sort of way on his life. But as you can imagine, my favorite part of Donnie Darko is actually his mother, played by, oh my God,
Mary McDonnell.
Yeah, Mary McDonnell.
Oh my God, yeah.
So glamorous, so great
she's
in the
so
film.
She's so good in this. She's just, I mean, we need to do Mary McDonnell.
We do.
Every time she crops up in something, she's unlike anyone else. She's just got this peculiarity that is so magnetic.
Yeah, because she's really graceful and elegant, but also odd at the same time, which I think is not that easy to do. But it's Mary McDonnell and Beth Grant in this movie. Like, Beth Grant, when I rewatching it for this, I was like, she is so fun. Like, the moment where they have brought Jake Gyllenhaal and her parents, including Mary McDonnell, and she's explaining what he said, Jake Gyllenhaal said to her.
I'll tell you what he said. He asked me to forcibly insert the Lifeline exercise card into my anus.
He told me to stuff this thing up my ass. The dad laughs. It's just so good. And then the interaction between the mothers afterwards, because Beth Grant, I should say, she works in the school, but she also has children in the school. And she also is very super keen on this religious dance troupe, Sparkle Motion. And one of the best lines of dialogue in any film ever is like,
"Sometimes I doubt your commitment to Sparkle Motion."
And she says it twice to her. Right? Like, I was like, am I? But which is a part of the film, I guess, of like things repeating themselves. But yeah, so I really like the film. I think it has lots of really interesting things to say, but emotionally it doesn't connect to me in the way that I really wish it would. The way it connects to other people, like you've just described earlier, is wonderful. Yeah, because there's so many great things about it. It is quite moving. And actually, because we did do Southland Tales, which was the director's next feature, which is even wilder and more ambitious, it's really exciting to see Donnie Darko again after watching Southland Tales.
Yeah, it is. It's one that I wouldn't hold to the same esteem as I did when I was much younger. I mean, this would have been one of my favourite films. I just thought it was like, even if it's either too clever for its own good or not clever enough for its own good, it's one of the two. But at the time, I would have always just thought it was smart and just loved the mystery of it and not actually knowing what was going on with the kind of the timeline and how does it wrap up and to what effect does that matter is maybe actually more where I land now, because I still think it's fascinating. I think it's a really wonderful time capsule, both in that it doesn't feel quite like it's set in the 80s, but based on its soundtrack, it must be. It's sort of kind of lost in time between the early noughties and the 80s. The music really elevates that. I think the casting across the board is fascinating as well. Talking about time capsule, because you've got these sort of iconic figures from different generations. So say you've got Drew Barrymore in there. You've got
Patrick.
You've got Patrick Swayze in there. And then you've got the
Noah from ER. Is that what he played? Noah? That's the only reason I knew him. The guy that explains time travel. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Oh, gosh, right. I mean, I wouldn't have placed him.
He's very attractive in ER.
As that. No, I'm thinking of, I can't remember her name. She plays the therapist. She's in The Graduate and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Is she the daughter in Real Graduate?
Yes.
God, I can't think of her name off the top of my head, and also I would not have recognized her. Amazing.
Her name is Catherine Ross.
Of course.
So I just think I find it to be a deliberate choice to almost kind of appeal to different generations and these really iconic faces coming up in ways like you're saying you wouldn't necessarily recognize when they're playing against type. Even taking, say, Drew Barrymore at this point in time is very interesting, playing a teacher.
Yeah.
I just love the choices.
Because she literally played a student and never been kissed, two days ago? I was going to say 2 years ago. And I know she was going back in time or whatever in there.
Yeah.
We're not in the same way as Donnie Darko.
Well, exactly. But it's, yeah, so much fascinating things. The dialogue, it's so playful, it's so angsty. Like you're saying, the spark emotion stuff is wonderful. Even just the fights between real-life siblings, Maggie and Jake Gyllenhaal, the suck-a-fuck line, it always sticks with me. It's very exciting, and especially at the beginning. I think it is almost a perfect film at the beginning in terms of the intrigue it builds and how it's shot, everything just feels wildly exciting, and it maybe loses that as it moves towards the end. But I do still find it very interesting throughout, and Beth is so wonderful in it. And she's doing something here which she does in other things but really leans into, and it's something about the lilt of her voice, in that there is always almost a question and fearfulness in her voice. And she talks about playing this character and loving her and understanding that she isn't just the bad guy of the film, that there is more to her, and why does she feel the way she does. And you can sense the sincerity she is bringing to it, and I think it really elevates it and makes those lines even funnier. But just this kind of the bend to her voice and this questioning timidness within this character, I find really interesting. She's perfect. And also the topical nature of this character now. I mean, she's in there trying to ban books in the school, and we're there again. All these 20-odd years later in this film, probably being set even earlier than that. Fascinating. We have not moved on at all. So I find a lot of it exciting in a fresh way, and I find a lot of it interesting in that sort of time capsule, looking at what this film was way. So delighted to watch it again. Forever an interesting and kind of standalone work, Donnie Darko, I think.
I totally. Well, it's so much part of our generation.
Yeah.
Or particularly in, if you're into films or culture in any way, it was such a formative film. Even if I didn't see it, it had such an impact.
Yeah, for sure.
And I doubt your commitment to Sparkle Motion.
I doubt my commitment to, sorry. I'll try harder. Right. The next few years, we get Miss Grant in The Rookie, an episode of CSI. We have her in the film Matchstick Men. We have her in an episode of Malcolm in the Middle, an episode of 6 Feet Under, Lord. Brian Fuller's Wonderfalls.
Oh my God, she's in. Is she in Pushing Daisies?
And she's also in Pushing Daisies.
That is only just when you said him, I was like, that is how I recognize her too. I've had an image, and I'm trying to find it.
Yeah, so she's worked with Brian Fuller three or four times now, and the character she plays in Wonderfalls is the same character in Pushing Daisies. Even though they were different shows, entirely disconnected, different networks, they managed to buy basically... He really wanted this character to be back. So Brian Fuller was a big fan of Beth Grant, rightly so, and she only has the nicest things to say about working with him. So in 2006 then, here we go, it's one of your favourites. We see her as Pageant Official Jenkins in Little Miss Sunshine.
Wonderful.
It is a wonderful film, Little Miss Sunshine, and it's one that often escapes me, but it was so iconic at the time and has continued to be in a fascinating way. I think it stands alone as that sort of Sundance American indie of this time. It is sort of the peak example of the kind of film, but at its best, because there's plenty of examples of where it gets into really hokey terrain. But Little Miss Sunshine is just really lovely. And the scenes with Beth that you described earlier, just that ending is just so wonderful.
Yeah.
Of people coming together in such an endearing way as Beth tries to haul them off the stage.
Well, again, playing another conservative woman, she does not want little girls stripping, but she's fine with them wearing fake tan and prancing around like adult women.
Quite right. Fake tan is for everyone. Let's be clear about that. 2006 also sees her re-team with Richard Kelly, so this is where we have her in Southland Tales. We also have her in The House of Usher, Flags of Our Fathers, Factory Girl. She did seem to work a few times with Sienna Miller, actually. And we also have an episode of My Name is Earl for fans of that show. I remember it being advertised all the time, and I was like, I do not want to watch this.
I don't know what that is, but...
In 2007, we have her back in an Oscar-winning Best Picture with... No Country for Old Men. In this, we have her starring as the mother of Kelly MacDonald's Carla Jean.
And again, she's very important to the story because she, doesn't she like share information in a way she really shouldn't be?
Yes. There's a wonderful scene with her in the back of a car, done up in a very interesting wig. So she looks quite different, but still very much Beth Grant.
You need help with the bugs, madam.
Oh, thank God, there is one gentleman left in West Texas. Yes, thank you, I am old and I am not well.
Which bus are you taking?
Going to El Paso, don't ask me why.
Yeah, she starts talking to people she shouldn't, and they know exactly what they're doing. So they find the way into the whole situation through Beth and her far too willing nature. In No Country for Old Men, I guess we don't need to say too much more about it other than it's a great film.
Yeah, good. Shame she didn't work more with the Coen brothers.
Yeah, that would be a really good mix, actually. I think they should give her a meatier role and do that again. I think it would be a great thing.
Yeah, I agree.
So, following No Country for Old Men, or certainly in the years that followed, we have her in an episode of Bones, in The Office, the US version, and this is where we see her return to Brian Fuller for The Wonderful Pushing Daisies, and playing that same character, which is called Marianne Marie Bettel, which we encountered in the previously mentioned Wonderfalls. She returns to the world of The Sordid Lives, the film we discussed earlier, to play Sissy again in a series that was developed, again, by Del Shores. So she was in the entire run of that show. And then 2009, this is where we have her in the most important Sandra Bullock film of that year, of course, All About Steve.
I will say I prefer All About Steve to The Blind Side. I'm not joking.
I think that's probably fair.
And I don't like All About Steve. I mean, yeah. Again, this is not a Sandra Bullock podcast, and sadly we'll never get to talk about Sandy, who I love so much. I will say Beth is very good in All About Steve.
Good.
And she would have been good as a Kathy Bates part in Blindside.
There we go. She should have had it all. Interestingly, I did read an interview with her where she actually says that she thought All About Steve was pretty good and was hard done by.
I think she needs to leave her sheltered life if she thinks she's All About
Steve didn't deserve that hate. I don't know why they went after it like they did.
Yeah, well, to be fair, I'd actually read what was said about it, but I would imagine the reasons they were going for it were not the reasons why it probably shouldn't be a great film or shouldn't be seen. I don't know. I just feel like people are sexist and mean, and you know, tearing down someone like Sandra Bullock is something people enjoy doing. No,
yeah, boring.
And she's the best thing in it by far.
Okay, let's move forward some more. We then have her in the film that won Jeff Bridges his Oscar, Crazy Heart, an episode of Patricia Arquette, All-Timer Medium, and Criminal Minds. This also begins her run of voice work in King of the Hill, which she must have done quite a lot throughout the entirety of that animated series. She voices a character in Rango, the Gore Verbinski animated film about the lizard. And then she also stars as Pepe's maid in another Best Picture winner, This time it's the artist. Now, I didn't actually go and revisit her in this, and I can't remember. Do you have any comment on this?
When Berenice is successful in making money, Bess Grant plays the maid. So it's like a representing sort of, look, like, we've made it. And I think, is it Jean?
Jean Dujardin.
Yeah. I was like, I was going to call him Sean. I was like, that can't be right. It buys that head. Jean, he's pissed off, basically, because he's like, what are you doing? You're wasting this money. And blah, blah. I haven't seen The Artist since it came out, so that's just more reading around it. I actually don't know where it is, if it's available to stream. It's not a movie people talk about or what, like.
No, it feels kind like of it's lost. Sort of really came and went, even though at the time people couldn't stop talking about it, but then as soon as the Oscars happened, people stopped talking about it.
But do you think that was more film buffs? I don't know if my parents have seen The Artist, for instance, and they would go to watch Little Miss Sunshine or Rain Man or whatever.
No,
All About
you.
Steve. No, I don't think, I really don't think that happened. But you know what I mean? Anyway, that is, and they would have seen No Country for Old Men, so they've seen two out of three Best Picture winners.
Amazing work.
But yeah, she did talk about The Artist and said because they were so keen, the team, because it was could be seen as a French production, even though it was filmed in LA and is focused on Hollywood. They do talk about her being rolled out a lot to prove that it had American roots. So like people like herself, John Goodman, I think James Cromwell's in it too as well. Anyway, they had a lot of like all the kind of American stars, let's say, or semi-famous people, they wheeled out a lot to prove that it was American rooted.
That's very true.
So she said it was great exposure.
Yeah. Oh, well.
And did she get a Screen Actors Guild Award nomination for that? Did that happen?
She didn't, because she's never gotten in the ensemble because she doesn't meet their rules of not being on whatever credit, the title cards. What a shame. Anyway, what else did we get in 2011? Well, we have Beth writing and directing a short film called The Perfect Fit, which would be part of a feature film collection titled Girls, 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 which had short films written, directed, shot, and produced entirely by women. So in The Perfect Fit, we have Beth Grant herself alongside Octavia Spencer, and her other real-life pal, that famous puppet master, Frances Fisher. Beth has dabbled in the world of directing and writing as well, and has also produced a few bits and pieces here and there as well, worth mentioning.
And she wanted to turn that short film into a feature film, but she couldn't get funding and support.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, how frustrating. We then get a few more TV appearances with voice work in American Dad. We have her in Modern Family and Dexter, all of which she starred in single episodes of. 2012 gives us what I still think must be Beth's perhaps only leading performance to date, and this is her returning to Del Shores to play the titular character in Blues for Willa Dean. So playing a character called Willa Dean. Which she had
playing
played,
blues.
Playing blues for. She played this character in the stage play that it was adapted from, which was called The Trials and Tribulations of a Trailer Trash Housewife. It was really lovely to see her taking on a proper leading role, because it very much revolves around her. She's playing a character who is living in her, I guess, trailer park community. Octavia Spencer plays her neighbour and best pal, called, and I mean this, it was funny but also so ridiculous, called Lasagna, but pronounced by everyone as Lasagna.
Solid joke, solid humour.
So I was kind of distracted by that throughout. So anyway, she's...
Who doesn't love Lasagna?
I truly don't know anybody.
Well,
it's a good name. Beth Grant's character, Willa Dean, very repressed by an abusive husband who doesn't even let her out to go and work or anything. And the film sort of follows her as she learns through this, the friendship, particularly with Octavia's character, that she doesn't just want to sink into the background, and she would like to kind of pursue work and pursue other things for herself. But it is a constant battle for her, unfortunately, with this terrible, terrible husband.
I've been thinking, JD, maybe if you cut down there to once or twice a week and...
No, that would not be nice. I work my ass off for us, and you are trying to take away my one true pleasure in life.
When this was on the stage in Los Angeles, it won a lot of the main prizes that you can win for being on the stage in LA. So it did very well. She did very well from it. I will just go and say that, unfortunately, I don't think this is her at her best, which is a shame considering it is the only leading role we have. I don't think I much like the material here. I don't know if it translates well from being a play. It feels very like that. There's a lot of musical, it's not even interludes because it's woven in, this character who's played like a gospel choir leader type character, sort of guiding her and singing to her through the window and when she goes into church in these moments. And I find it quite jarring.
On stage, I bet that was really powerful.
I bet
but it doesn't
was.
I agree with you exactly. I think I can imagine, you know, if you see a character who is, you know, in the worst possible scenario that you would ever imagine, really. And it, like, her husband has no redeeming features. He's also having an affair with another person in the trailer community, played by Dale Dickey, and is also abusing them. So not only is Beth being treated like shit in terms of her partner cheating on her and him beating her and everything, she also is in a way, it feels like she's enabling that to happen with someone else nearby. So then to have the relief of this music to like... motivate the characters, but also like express things that you could not possibly be able to communicate just with words, I think it would be really powerful. And in the hands of other people, or maybe it would have worked cinematically. But yeah, overall, I would agree. I think it doesn't work as a film, and it's not detailed enough. Like, there's not enough information to really like make it gripping and interesting to tell such a horrible sort of story too.
I guess
you're right probably about Beth Grant and not being her best performance, but she's doing good work. It's just the material isn't really giving her much more any support, and I think that's the same for all of them. But yes, it is, it's definitely not a film I would recommend, but then you're right. I think the closest we get to a great performance that's more lead or more meaty is Sordid Life then.
Yeah, I think, yes, she has way more to do there, and I think she's being more interesting. She does have really strong moments in Blues for Willa Dean, I will say. There is moments where she is giving it her all and it is doing very well. It is just that the material doesn't rise up, or there's confusion between her being on stage and being on screen, and it just feels like the delivery's not there in a way that you'd sort of want from a film like this to kind of sweep you in. But it's nice moments. Her relationship with Octavia is very good and maybe made all the better by the fact that they are friends and all of these things. And an interesting time that this came out in 2012, and at this point in time, Octavia was winning her Oscar probably in 2012, actually, because I think The Help came out in 2011. So it's certainly a good person to have in the cast for what was quite a small film. I think there was talks of trying to kind of re-release it. Maybe this did happen, but I still can't imagine it reaching a very wide audience, to be honest. But also glad I've seen it because it is her most substantial role, certainly that I've seen in film, or I can imagine that there is out there of her on film.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. 2012 then also sees the beginning of her longest TV run. So she stars in pretty much the entirety of the Mindy Project, which is Mindy Kaling's TV sitcom. She would work in this from 2012 through to 2017 in a 70-something episode arc. So got a lot of work out of the Mindy Project compared to the single episode she has done so often before, which I think then probably contributes to the sort of quieter spell from those more iconic roles over the years that follow. So we have her returning to Brian Fuller once again to play a character called Marie in a TV movie called Mockingbird Lane. So again, Marie, maybe the same character once again, maybe just not as blatantly. This is a reinvented version of the Munsters. She also returns to the US office. We have her in Justified, Grey's Anatomy. So actually, I'm lying. There's all these iconic shows this time. The Secret Life of the American Teenager. There's the Jason Bateman starring Bad Words. Courtney Cox's directed film Just Before I Go, Faults. And then we have a few other bits and pieces leading us into 2016, where we have her as Lady Bird Johnson in Jackie.
Yeah, she seems so delighted to have that part too, and has she loved Pablo Larraín, which makes sense. She has taste. And Natalie Portman, yeah, I don't really remember. I remember her in one moment where they interact as if she's like awkward about like, oh well, I'm the first lady. Do you know like who's in charge? But I love that movie, but I don't remember Beth Grant apart from that one moment. But when I read it, I was like, yes, I do. I can picture her in that movie, on that plane, all that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, that's, I think, exactly the same as me. I can picture her in it. Maybe it's just because Natalie Portman is so compelling in that film that it's hard to see past her.
Yeah, and it's framed, I think, around Natalie Portman as well, in that pink outfit that she's wearing in that sequence in particular. But yeah.
So following on from here, again, Brian Fuller, she's in a couple of episodes of his show American Gods. She's in a few episodes of A Series of Unfortunate Events, and seeing clips of it, she is having a hoot in that, and seems very different yet again. Her voice and everything feels very different, so maybe I should check out those episodes.
Yeah, that's a fun show. I feel like that went kind of under the radar. I didn't finish it all, but isn't Joan Cusack in it too? Am I making that up?
I think she is. I think
yeah.
You're right.
I think it's really really interesting. I like the movie too. I just think I must love the source material. I've never read it, but I like the world of it.
Good. Speaking of a world I like, she is in an episode of Grace and Frankie in 2022, and also in three episodes of an animated series. I didn't even know this existed. Based on Better Call Saul, called Better Call Saul Presents Slippin' Jimmy.
Oh.
So a bit more voice work there. And then most recently we have her in David O. Russell's Amsterdam and five episodes of Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches. She also has a couple of things in the pipeline. I'm not too sure about how successful they'll be. One of them, for example, is a James Franco-directed film.
Well, there we go.
Interesting. But hopefully we will get better things in the pipeline to come. But a fascinating person. I mean, I've listed a lot of things there, and even that is probably a third of the amount of stuff that she actually has worked on. So incredibly prolific performer, someone who we have both said always delightful to watch. What do you think is her best performance? Where do you most enjoy watching her? What film would you recommend of hers, for example?
Okay, so I would say her best performance in the film, which matches what she's doing, is probably Donnie Darko. But then I'm not sure, like, the film I'd recommend if Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah.
So that's where I would settle on that. But then, to be honest, there's plenty that jump to mind, but they'd be the two that are, like, Little Miss Sunshine, I would suggest most of the time.
Yeah.
Someone's like, I want to see a horror story. It's like, oh, there's a film, Little Miss Sunshine.
Please watch it. I agree. I think Donnie Darko's the strongest. It is also a pretty meaty role, actually, yeah, compared to a lot of the other stuff she gets to do. And I would also recommend that. But for me, if for some reason you haven't seen the film Speed and you like 90s action, then why on earth have you not watched it? Please do. It's fun.
And I feel like The Artist is a film I want to recommend to myself to rewatch, because okay, I do think it's a bit sad that people don't talk about it, but maybe there's a reason.
Yeah, I mean, I remember liking it, so it's a good point. Maybe we'll recommend that for ourselves. Or pick someone else who's in The Artist and make sure we actually watch it.
Yeah, there's probably loads of people in that.
Wonderful. All righty. Well, speaking of wishing things in the pipeline for Beth, do you have any suggestions of what you would like to see her work on in the future?
Yeah, this is really basic, but she is a Southern Belle. You know, she's very proud of that. She likes making stories of that area. I think maybe my favorite story or TV show or film that's been set there in recent times is Ozark. So I would like the people behind Ozark, who are Bill Dubuc and Mark Williams, okay, to make something with Beth Grant, like a movie about someone who is in the South. Please tell me the Ozarks in the South, or else I've messed all this up. But I assume they are because of the way the characters speak. Anyway, regardless, I would hope that they are create a story about her, and it's either she like inherits, you know, a I was going to steal that the storyline from that Toni Collette movie, but she inherits like a whole drug sort of ring, and she has to like jump to the status of a mafia boss, which is literally stealing from another movie. Or maybe she's just like, you know, just a woman that somehow gets embroiled in some sort of dangerous attack. I don't know. I want her to play someone ordinary, and there's something like drives her to do something extraordinary, which I guess we do see Ruth, who is that amazing actor whose name I've totally Julia Garner, does do that in Ozark. So I would like that sort of part, but for Beth Grant.
Love it. I think that sounds like a good fit, and I can imagine her in that world anyway. So that feels like quite a natural.
Because she could be terrifying. I think that's something that was not really seen enough of her. I think she could, it could be dialed up a few notches for her to be properly terrifying. Yeah. Like have the energy of what Julia Garner's doing in that show. Yeah.
And I reckon she could, for the same sort of reasons, play other horror thriller type things as well. Good
like
show.
Why was she not in... like speaking of people taking parts, and I love Leslie Manville in this film, but like I think Beth Grant would have been terrific in Let Him Go.
Yeah.
I think she would have been amazing as the matriarch there.
Yeah, that's such
and I absolutely love that movie, and I love Leslie Manville, and even though it doesn't seem to have any impact on anybody's career because nobody saw it, sadly, because of COVID. I think Beth Grant would have been amazing as that person.
Yeah, I can completely see that. Great shout. I'll go sort of a different direction. Even though we do get sort of motherly, nice characters from her, I think they're always very conservative-leaning. And I think I would like to see her play the warmer side, which she does so well, but maybe in a more kind of liberal-type arc. I would quite like to see her in a film sort of like maybe Grandma with Lily Tomlin. So her playing a grandma,
and
maybe
Garner.
Having... There she is, Julia Garner connection, but also the Julia Garner collection.
Love it.
And it could be her again. I would like with a queer grandchild, I think, something, and just a very straightforward story of these two connecting... what their life looks like.
Maybe Julia Garner could be the queer child.
Yeah, I think that could work. And maybe it's... I'm also kind of seeing it as a sort of a Greta Gerwig Ladybird type thing too. But yeah, her as a grandmother, a kind of child who maybe gets a lot from this grandmother, but for their own reasons might need to leave where they're from and move on, and them sort of having that... battle, I would think, would play very interestingly. So yeah, that would be my choice.
That sounds lovely. Do you know what a film that's just jumped to mind? Cinema Paradiso, like that sort of connection.
Ooh, yeah.
Like Alfredo and... honestly, can't think of the little boy's name that turned into a man. But yeah. Oh, well, again, thank you, Brian, for bringing Beth to us.
Yeah.
We hope you enjoyed. And if you've any more complaints, no, I'm only joking. I love when people feedback. It means they listen.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's true. At least we know he's listening enough to tell us off. So thank you for telling us off, Brian. We listened. If you've got any more suggestions, please do let us know. And if anyone else has any suggestions, Michael, where may they send those?
You can send them to... your trash.
Yeah.
You can send them to us on email, which is don'tknowher@gmail.com, or you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at don'tknowher_pod.
Gorgeous. Well, thank you so much for chatting, Beth, with me today. It's been an absolute pleasure. I hope you will all join us next time as well for our next adventure with a star of the big screen who we want to celebrate some more.
Even though we didn't, and they've been suggested.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry about it, but no, we're trying.
This is an exciting person. With a really interesting mix of movies. So, yeah, I can't wait. Yes, thank you, Scott, as always, and thank you all for listening.
Thank you. And until then, have a lovely day. Goodbye.
Bye.